Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello there, buddy. How you doing?
Well, I'm a lot warmer now that I'm inside than I was outside.
Yeah, it's colder than you fill in the blank.
Yes. Well, I've not heard that expression before. And this morning it was in the 30s at my house, and I had frost on my windshield. Yeah, and frost on the truck door handle. And I thought, whew, that's a first since last year. Boy.
Yeah, it was 37 when I left to come to work. That was about 10:30.
Oh, yeah, you do. You don't wake up till 10. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah. I party all night, baby.
Yeah, you're one of them banker dudes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening today. Yeah, I hope you are, at least. This is a lawn and garden show, but I'm not going to speak about lawns today. You know, lawns are passe until about April, okay? But if you have a question concerning any of your landscaping, you may call 673-4464 and ask me your question. And all questions are fair game. That's okay. And I won't cut you off or anything like that. And this show is about suggestions and information and education, plant knowledge, those kind of just general stuff.
Yeah.
And each week I try to pick a different subject to talk about or plants to talk about so that you all that listen regularly will have a well-rounded education,
there
if you will.
Did you give out the phone number?
Oh, 673-4464. Did I forget that?
I don't know. I didn't hear you, but that doesn't mean anything.
Well, maybe it's because you weren't listening.
That could have been.
I'm on the radio now, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, tune it in. Oh, gosh. Well, you know, and some stories here, too, that like when I first started my business back in 1973, that's a long time ago, trust me.
A couple of moons,
yeah. I was aware of Japanese maples as a tree, but I didn't know much about them. So I heard of this man here in Douglas County that specialized and grew thousands of them, and locally, right down here, past the country club, take the left, and it's on the river right in there somewhere. And his name was J.D. Vertrees. And so I went to his place, his home, and introduced myself, and I said, I've heard about you, and I'd like to learn something about Japanese maples. I know, you know, some of the basic ones.
But, and he told you to get off his property.
Yeah, no, he threw me in the river. And anyway, I tracked him down and, you know, paid him a visit. I didn't have to pay for the visit. I just paid him a visit. And it was like late spring. And when I drove up to his place, all I could see were thousands, literally thousands of beautiful trees. It was really an amazing sight. You know, I'd never seen anything, encountered anything like that before. I mean, I've seen, you know, a lot of Japanese maples, but not thousands.
Yeah.
28 different varieties or what, however many varieties he had there. There were a lot. And so with the thousands of Japanese maples in his collection, I spent a few hours viewing them, and of course he gave me the tour and told me which each one was, and gave me the scientific name and the common name. And you know, after a while the names started to get blurry and the Japanese names started to get blurry, and so I thought, well, I'll learn them later, which I did. Oh gosh, what a place. But they were just, it was just really an amazing thing to see all those trees, you know, right here in Douglas County. And no sign, no nothing. I mean, you go down this long driveway, and he's right on the banks of the North Umpqua, and you know, very quiet, nondescript, but lots of trees and some greenhouses and things like that. But so after spending a few hours looking at them, I spotted some very unique looking Japanese maples, and they were small. And I asked JD, I said, hey, could I buy some of those? And he gave me a very definite no. Well, okay. And so, being curious, I asked why. And his answer surprised me. He said, "I don't sell these trees to local nurseries." Uh-oh. And I thought, all these trees and you don't sell to local nurseries? He said, "I only sell to areas outside of Oregon." And I thought, whoa, wow. Geez. And normally his seedlings is what he shipped all over the world, apparently. I mean, he shipped them to Holland, to France, to England, to New York. I mean, he was shipping. He may have. I didn't, he didn't give me the complete list. But I thought, man, don't sell to local nurseries. Okay. And all I wanted was one tree from the thousands that were there. And it was a small tree, maybe 3 feet tall in a 2 gallon size pot. But it was unique. It was had a very light green leaf with dark green spots all the way through it, and then kind of a pink tinge at the same time in the leaf. I mean, it was amazing. I'd never seen a tree like that. And so I asked him about it and got a few answers, and I thought, geez Louise, okay. This guy was not what I'd say forthcoming with his, But anyway, I was, a young guy at that time, so I brushed it off. But when I left, I was not happy with this man at all. And I left very quickly, and my attitude was not good toward him at all. And I thought that, all those trees, he wouldn't sell me one, gee whiz. Okay, so, about 7 years later, I had Wintergreen Nursery up and running, and I had purchased, there was a small nursery out in Elkton that was going out of business, and they wanted to sell all their stock, and it was a very small nursery. So I went out there and looked at it, and it was, again, right along the main Umpqua, and it was down one of those roads, I can't remember, right before you get to the big bridge, before you go up the hill that goes into Elkton, you take a left on that road, whatever road that is, and it was down there, and I spotted it, and I got out, and I looked around. And he had a few of these and a few of those and everything else, but then he had 600 Japanese maples. Yeah, they were just all one variety, but there were 600 of them, and they were small. And I bought them. I bought them all, and because he was going out of business, he had been in it for a while, and all that. And these were beautiful, and I thought, geez, this is great. And they were the red leaf variety. They're kind of semi-upright, but still weeping a little bit. So, and I can't remember right now exactly what variety it was. It's been a long time ago. But I took it back to my nursery and set them all out and had a big block of them, and they were leafing out, and, just spring was coming. And I had them for maybe 2 months, and so it was probably May. when they were real,
said, "What are you gonna do with all those?"
I said, "I'm gonna sell them, honey. I'm using my landscaping jobs." So one day I was in the nursery waiting on some customers, and I spotted an elderly couple, looking at plants, and then they wandered over to my Japanese maple display. So I wandered over and I asked if I could help them, and the man said that I had a very beautiful display of maples, and he was very impressed. Hmm. I thought, "Whoa." And then he introduced himself as J.D. Vertrees. Uh-oh. My first thought was, they're not for sale. That was my first thought. I'm not going to sell you nothing. You wouldn't sell me one tree.
Yeah.
That one, I was...
You know what they say about payback.
I know. But then my second thought was, thank you for complimenting my Japanese maple.
Yeah.
And then I told him my story of visiting his nursery 7 years ago and not being able to buy one tree from him. And he laughed, and we both had a good laugh about it. And he shook my hand, and he said, "Well, that was what I was doing, and I didn't really know who you were, blah, 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 blah." And, it was good, but we became instant friends.
Oh, okay.
At that point, we were instant, and then we started talking, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So over the next 20 years... He taught me many things about Japanese maples. And he even taught me how to graft new varieties and grow them successfully. And, you know, basically J.D. and I became great friends. And when he wrote his book, he's got this beautiful book on Japanese maples, hardcover, big picture book with beautiful color photos that he took himself, by the way, and full descriptions of the particular tree that you're viewing at that point right next to it. And there's like three trees per page. And it's one of those big hardcover books. It's really a pretty book. And I was looking for it today to bring it in to show you, and I couldn't find it somewhere in my office that I'm trying to clean up for the new owner.
You
could have
Googled it.
Yeah, I Googled it. Yeah, I would have Googled it. But anyway, you know, it was just beautiful. Anyway, he gave me he gave me a copy of his book, autographed, signed copy, and I still got it somewhere at the nursery.
Nice.
And
you'll find it among your treasures.
Yeah, I'll get back and I'll go, oh, there it is, sitting right on my desk under all those papers. What's wrong with me?
Like all those things you found in your desk.
Yeah, right. I'll tell you what. But and I've read many books on Japanese maples and a lot of other trees and things like that. But and the other books are adequate, and they talk about how to plant and what kind of varieties there are. But nothing surpasses his book. It is a masterpiece. It really is a masterpiece. I haven't found a book that can even come close.
So it's the go-to book.
Oh, it is definitely the go-to book if you're serious about growing or selling or educating yourself about Japanese maples. And, you know, a Japanese maple is very unique in size and shape and color and hardiness. And they're not a tree that requires any special treatments either.
Wow.
You know, people...
Nice.
People come in and look at them in our nursery over the years, and they're sitting there debating, say a husband and wife are debating whether to get one because they look so fragile, I guess, would be, you know, because they're small leaves and they're beautiful, and you think, oh, that's not very hardy or something along those lines. Yeah, exactly. But the total opposite is true. They're tougher. They're just as tough as an old oak tree or a madrone tree, for crying out loud. Oh, yeah.
I thought you were going to say a logger.
Yeah, well, no, they're not as tough as a logger. Oh, gosh. But, you know, they're like I say, they don't require special treatment. You know, just once after they've been planted in your yard or, you know, the first year you... like I say, water them maybe once a week, once every 10 days if the soil is dry. They do really, really fine. I've tested them greatly. I've planted, dozens of them on my place along the creek, up on the hill, in front of the house, you know, in different locations, some in shade, some in sun, and all that kind of stuff. And once they get over the hump of the first year and they're fully rooted in, you know, you kind of start to cut back on watering. And so there are some I have on my hillside. I can't remember the last time I watered them. And they're still doing well. They're still growing well.
Even in this extreme drought.
Even in the extreme drought.
And
the one I'm thinking of right now is probably, a good eight feet tall, maybe. And it's one of the big leafed red burgundy leaf color, really a beautiful tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got a couple where I park, and then I walk across it's not a bridge, but it's kind of a bridge to the house. I've got one on either side of that, and they get watered probably a little bit more simply because they're close to the house, and you can actually stretch a hose over there. But the ones on the hill, you don't stretch no hoses, do they? I'd have to have four hoses all connected together, you know, to get up there. But when they were young, I would carry like a 5-gallon bucket of water up there, and I'd have three of them, and I'd, you know, split it up. But I was only doing that maybe twice a month, the first year, maybe the second year. And after that, I thought, let's see how tough these guys really are. And they are. They are extremely tough. So, do we have a break?
We do.
Okay, I shall return. 673-4464 if you have a question.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, you know, Mike, we haven't got one call yet today. That's not good.
I know, and last week was like bang, 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 bang. And
yeah.
Whoa, what's going on here? But if you want to call, 673-4464. And just because I'm talking about Japanese maples, it doesn't have to be a question about Japanese maples. It can be a question about your lawn or your fir trees or, you know, your banana tree that's not producing bananas. You know, whatever.
Imagine that.
Yeah, you know, just give us a call if you have a question. It's okay. But I'm talking about, speaking about the Japanese maples now and how colorful they are, how tough they are, and just how unique and beautiful they are. They're just an amazing, amazing tree. I have a koi pond in my backyard, and it's raised up about 3 feet above the level of the house because of the hill, and but I planted a few Japanese maples around it, and from when I sit in my place at the supper table, we've got these windows, and I can look right out and see the koi pond and the Japanese maples. And the one I have, I can't identify it. I forgot the name, of course. I could probably identify it with Mr. Vertree's book. But that it is the brightest, hottest orange color right now.
Jeez.
That it is just eye-popping. And it's not very large. It's maybe 4 feet tall, if that, and probably 3 feet wide. And it's just an exquisite tree. And, you know, I've got some that are deep red and some that are light red and some that are multicolored. But this one, I guess, especially when the sun hits it, it just, boom, you know, it looks like it's on fire almost. It's really...
The burning bush.
It could be. It could be. But it's the brightest orange I've ever seen. And,
wow.
You know, like I say, I can see it just sitting at the table looking out. And I go, wow, I see it every night. And it hasn't lost very many leaves yet. I thought it would lose when we're having rain. Usually, you know, the leaves are turning and they're with that rain, you think, well, some are going to fall off.
Right.
Not very many of them fell off. So
is that the same pond where your pesky little friends came?
Yeah, my otter buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same one. Well, since then, one of the clients came into the nursery one day, probably a month or so ago, and said, you know, we got a bunch of koi in our pond, and our pond is too small. Do you want them? Yeah, okay. How much? No, free. We'll give them to you. So they brought them over in a couple of buckets, big 5 gallon buckets, and there was one, gee whiz, probably 7-8 inches long, and then the other ones are 3 or 4 inches long. Took them to the home. Popped them in the pond, and they're just happy as clams. How's that?
They love it.
They love it. And so far, the otters haven't found them.
Well, that tree's protecting them.
I hope so. Those otters, they were nasty-looking little things.
Oh.
And they treated my wife terribly.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah. They hissed at her.
Uh-oh.
She threw a rock at them to chase them out of the pond, you know?
Yeah.
And they just came up, two of them looked at her and hissed at her, you know, kind of snarled. Yeah. With teeth and everything. And
wow.
So she was going to get a stick or something. And by that
shotgun.
Time, yeah, right. I don't want dead otters in my pond. Anyway, by the time she got back out there, they were already out of the pond going up the hill. And I'm thinking, why are they going up the hill? They're water-seeking
animals,
you know. Why? From my pond up to the dry brush? Okay.
Maybe they'll die up there.
You never know. They're probably just escaping.
Boy, sorry. That's a nasty attitude.
Yeah, it was. You know, don't have one for a pet, for
no.
sure.
No.
You know.
Rabies.
Oh, gosh. But these Japanese maple around our pond there, it's a, you know, it's a formal kind of pond with a lot of rocks and boulders, and I got 3 waterfalls on it in different locations. It's kind of cool. Makes noise. The Japanese maples, I've got one that's deep purple, one that's deep orange, one that's kind of yellowish. So the combination, and one kind of burgundy, real deep burgundy. So, you know, it's a lot of color right there.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, Japanese maples. And I try to create a semi-Japanese garden, you know, with a little bit of Lithuanian blood in there, too. That's me, my background. And it looks really good. And The trees just set it off. And again, there are no-brainer. I don't do much to them. I think my wife might go out there in the summer and water them because the hose bib and everything's right there in the back of the house. So, you know, it's an easy shot. And then I have all my bonsai collection on the wall. And so there's probably 20-25 of those, and they need to be watered simply because they're in shallow pots, and so consequently you might as well water the other things while you're at it. But anyway, you can really decorate a yard very nicely with Japanese maples. Some only grow a foot tall and spread, you know, 4 feet wide. Some of them grow 60 feet tall, and I have one in my display garden in the back end of the nursery that's about 50 or 60 feet tall. And wow. And I almost killed it when I first put it in, and the name tag has faded, and it was a long Japanese name and I can't remember, but if I look it up in the book I can
Kamasuki Kiyaya.
No, I don't know, I think it was Hostess Cupcake or something like that. But when I put it in, it was about 6-7 feet tall.
Yeah.
And I put it in the fall, and the leaves were turning kind of yellowish green, and, you know, very pretty. And they dropped, so I'm waiting until the following spring to see how they are. And I gave it a little bit of fertilizer, not much. And then the spring came along, and I saw the buds were starting to open, and I thought, oh, good, this is going to be really neat to see it in the spring. Well, the leaves opened up, and they were white. White, like this paper, white.
Mm.
The whole tree was white-leaved.
And albino.
I thought, what in the world is wrong with the tree?
Yeah.
So like a dummy, I gave it two handfuls of fertilizer.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I thought it was dying of lack of nutrition or something, you know, starving to death. But the other trees were fine. But, and then I'd say a week to 10 days, those white leaves started turning a pale yellow.
Oh.
And then another week goes by and they were green. So in the spring, they come out white, then they turn slowly to green. And thankfully, I didn't kill it by over-fertilizing it.
Oh, no.
But now it's...
That's interesting.
Yeah, now it's about, 15, 16 feet tall.
Yeah.
Very pretty tree. And I never fertilize it now. I don't do anything to
it. And the leaves are still white when they start?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's I'll look up the name in my book, and
okay.
And next week I'll have the name.
I'll hold you to that.
Okay, remind me. Call me 3 or 4 times.
I'll text you.
Oh gosh, but
you do text, don't you?
No, I do not do text. When my flip phone rings, I answer it. That's it.
Okay.
I'm not a computer guy. I'm not a text guy. I'm just a tree guy. But you can really liven up your landscape with these fall colors, spring colors, with Japanese maples. And like I say, they range anywhere from 3 feet tall to 4 feet wide to 20 feet tall. And some of them have grown. What I was reading about not too long ago, 50 feet tall. But they're not fast, but they do get that size in time, in a long time.
So plant them when you're young.
Yeah, when you're about 5 years old, make sure your parents plant one for you. So
yes.
When you're 35, you can enjoy it. Oh, golly. Well, anyway, I have and still the same trend, but I have many bonsai Japanese maples in pots around my koi pond. And at the nursery as well. And they do well in pots, given the proper soil and care. And they make a great patio plant or a deck plant, you know. Get a nice size pot so it can, you don't have to repot it every 2 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you get one of those very wide, say, 2 feet deep or 3 feet deep and 3 feet across, something that you're going to spend a few bucks on the pot, but that tree can live there for 50 years in that pot, so you don't have to redo it. But again, they make a great what?
Got a phone call.
We got a phone call. Okay.
We do have a phone call. Afternoon, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Yeah, this is Bill, the fellow that worked for Moyer.
Yeah.
Talking about maples, It seems to me like the seeds on maples don't germinate very well. Is that your experience too?
No, I've had great success with them. And in fact, every year I take a lot of maple seed off one of my favorite looking trees. And there's a technique to the germination. And I was taught this years ago by my one of my botany instructors in college. And what I do is you pick the seed and then fill the, let's say it's in a coffee can, the seed's in a coffee can. You fill it with water, let it set 24 hours. Then drain the water out. And then what I do is I have flats, plant flats, and I put a potting mix and then lay the seed in the potting mix and then cover it with about another quarter inch of potting mix, tamp it down very firmly, give it a shot of water and put it out. And I put them outside to germinate naturally, and I get about 75% germination.
Wow. Well, yeah. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Because I think I told you I want to get rid of these multiflora roses.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have a row of them, and they're a pain. I mean, to prune them every year. And
yeah, I know.
And they bite you.
I know. They've got a lot of little thorns, don't they?
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm going to try that with these vine maple. I've got some vine maple down here by the creek, and they're just full of seeds.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so do you pick them? Would this be a good time to pick them now?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely,
because if
you don't pick them, and within another month, they'll be falling off the trees onto the ground and germinating naturally.
Yeah. Well, I don't see any little trees coming up anywhere, though.
Well, maybe a bug got them, or a bird, or whatever, a worm. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, one time I got a big leaf maple here right by the house.
Mm-hmm.
It was just loaded with seeds now, but a couple of years ago, there was a gray squirrel.
Uh-huh.
He picked every seed off of that big tree. I mean, it's a big maple.
Well, he was well-fed.
I would watch him. He was like an acrobat. He'd come down the end of those limbs. He'd hang upside down.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
They're really amazing.
I know.
He hauled every seed off.
Yeah, he was hungry. He was storing it up for the winter.
Well, he stored them up somewhere. Oh, I was going to ask you about, what about native grasses? Do you have any suggestions?
You know, mean for like a lawn or something like that?
Oh, just to get them started.
Oh.
My ground here is that heavy clay. It's just so hard to do anything with.
Well, if you get a perennial rye of some sort, you can sow it right on the ground and forget it, and it'll root out and be green and going within a month or so.
Perennial rye, huh?
Yep.
You don't even have to till it or anything. Just throw it on the ground.
I've done that in hard places on my place, and it works every time.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for the tip about the seed, the maple seeds. I'm going to try that.
Okay, well, do it. And if you have a problem,
I want to replace those, multifolar rose with some vine maples.
That would be a much better plant to have there.
Yeah, they don't bite.
No, they're easy to prune and they don't grow fast.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Mike.
You're sure welcome. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty. And we are back. And the phone number again, Mike?
673-4464. You can call on anything. Well, no matter what I'm speaking of, you can be, you know, if I'm speaking about A, you can talk about Z. It doesn't matter. And I'll help you all that I can. As far as my brain will stretch, I'll help you out.
And that's a long stretch.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a long stretch. Oh, gosh. Well, you know, as I was in the last segment, prior to the call, I was talking about bonsai maples, and I've got, you know, quite a collection. Bonsai, you know, they're kept pruned. They're miniaturized, if you will. They're dwarfed because they're in a pot, and there's no room for the roots to really expand, so consequently they don't grow fast in a pot, and they're easy to maintain because you're pruning a little bit on them every year and keeping them. And what you get is a very ancient, old-looking Japanese maple in a nice-looking pot, and as long as you know how to take care of it, it stays good. it looks... You want something that's not perfectly straight. You want something that has a crook to it or a bend to it or a kind of gnarled, kind of mangled, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that gives them the aged look. They've been around for 100 years.
Kind of like my fingers.
Yeah, kind of like your fingers. Yeah, I noticed that. That's why I use them as an example.
Yeah.
But you got to give them the proper soil and the proper care. And like I say, they make a great patio plant or a deck plant. And a plant, and they are a plant that needs to be seen. So don't crowd them amongst a whole lot of shrubs or anything like that, because they get buried, you know. And they're beautiful. They're beautiful on a mound. You can make a mound of rock or soil and put a nice bonsai pot on top, and you can do it as a feature in the backyard or something in your front entryway. Prior to the porch, you can build something there or have some a trio of large pots with different Japanese maples in them. Whichever you like. There's so many ways you can design with them and make it just so interesting. And and they are really very little care. The smaller the pot, the more the care, because you might have to, in the summertime, I water mine every night very quickly, you know, with a spray nozzle, just very quick, just because some of my pots, the pot's only like 3 inches deep and maybe 10 inches long and 7 inches wide. So they're a real bonsai pot. But they dry out very quickly when it's 100 degrees. So consequently,
what doesn't?
Yeah, right. But at the very least, I water, or my wife waters, every other night in the summer. But in the spring and the fall, and you know, the times when it's cool and foggy like this, we haven't watered them, I don't think, in 3 weeks, and they're fine. They're looking good, and that's how tough they are.
Wow.
And, you know, a little bit of fertilizer once or twice a year, very light, very, very light, because, again, the roots are only 3 inches from the surface, and you could easily over-fertilize by putting too much granular food on them. The best way to do bonsai is with a liquid fertilizer, because it goes down into the roots, acts quickly, and if you put too much, it just drains out the drain holes. So you got to get that happy medium where you put just enough in the pot, but you're not draining it out the bottom the drain holes and wasting it too. So once you start doing something like that, you learn the techniques, and you learn just from trial and error what's best for the plant
and when and where.
And when, exactly. Yeah. And as far as pruning them, you know, when they start growing in the spring and they're sending up shoots from the top upright, you know, you go ahead and snip them back. What I like to create is a low, wide growing small tree. And so anything that goes up, I prune off. And then when little tiny branches kind of come out on the main stem, I prune a lot of those off, because I want to see through it. I want to see the older twisty branches. That's what makes the tree look ancient. It makes the tree look old, and that's what you're trying to create. So be out there with your little hefty pruners and go ahead and snip. You're not going to hurt them. It's okay. They'll work, and they turn into a beautiful tree. And if you have a small pot, let's say like a 12-inch pot, 12 inches long and 3 inches or 4 inches deep, that tree will probably last at least 4 to 5 years, maybe even 6 years if it's treated right. And then at that point in time, you may have to repot it into the next size up or go two sizes up, and it could live there probably the rest of its natural life.
Oh,
so
nice.
And then in the meantime, with the smaller pot that you vacated, you put your brand new bonsai, whatever kind, either Japanese maple or some kind of a mugo pine or some other kind of conifer evergreen, and start with them. So it's a fun thing. It's a hobby thing. You know, it's like, wow, how cool can you make this tree look? It looks 100 years old, but you know it's only 10 years old, but it's windswept. And I put a few rocks in there, and there's moss growing on the soil. And so it looks very ancient. And the background of all that is my pond and the waterfalls. So it's, you know, there's a good contrast there. I might make a good Japanese if I keep up this this work long enough, you know. But you want to fertilize sparingly in, say, early spring and maybe again in the fall, but very sparingly. Maybe a half a teaspoon of granular fertilizer spread around. And if you use the liquid fertilizer, don't overdose it, but go ahead and give it a good shot, because it doesn't stay there. It drains right through, and some of it obviously stays within the root system, but it's not so hot that it doesn't scorch anything. And that's the better way to fertilize your bonsai plants or anything that's potted. That way you can't kill the poor plant after you've worked with it for 10 years or whatever, and you go, maybe it needs a little more fertilizer. Bingo, I'll give it an extra tablespoon here. And you go, whoa, what happened? But the biggest problem I've seen over the years, of course, is overwatering. I mean, they need to be damp, but they don't need to be soaked. Especially Japanese maples or small conifers, you know, like dwarf mugo pines and dwarf spruces and things like that. I have a collection of mountain hemlocks that I've taken from the wilds up at the foot of Mount Thielson. And yes, I have gotten permits to do it, and stopped at the Glide Ranger Station and got my permits. I think there were 10 bucks or something, and you could get up to 50 trees for the 10 bucks, but I never got 50. I always kind of walked through the forest up at 5,000-6,000 feet elevation there at the base of Mount Thielson, and there's literally thousands of mountain hemlocks that are crooked, that have been mangled by other trees that have fallen down, but they look like they're 100 years old and they're only 2 feet tall because of the damage that they've had to go through and survived it all.
Boy, they're tough ones.
Oh, they are. And it's easy digging because it's all pumice soil. And pumice soil, you take a sharp shovel and you cut it with a knife. It pops out, the root ball pops out, and you take it home, pot it up, and it works. And they're beautiful little trees, and they grow slow, and they make perfect bonsai. Perfect. So that's it's an adventure. You might meet a bear, you might meet
your
a
new
cougar
wife.
Or a Sasquatch or something like that.
Sasquatch,
Yeah, I saw three of them one day. And
did you?
No.
No, I was just...
It was only two.
Only two. And speaking of which, we got a last break.
Okay, last break coming up.
As we go Sasquatch hunting.
Sasquatch. I saw one out in the parking lot.
No, I better not say what I thought.
You probably shouldn't.
What, you see it in my eyes?
Yeah, I did. Written on your forehead.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Alrighty. Moment of Silence was brought to you by your Roseburg Public Library.
It was brought to you by the guy that didn't hit the switch on time. And that's not me. I don't do the switches.
Oh, yes, he does.
Just talk. Yeah. And, of course, the last thing I want to tell you about your bone size and pots, don't overwater them. I mean, they should be good drainage. They should have very loose kind of a potting mix with sand. And so the nicer you make the soil, the better the roots grow, and the more the water drains and eliminates a whole host of problems. And if you don't know whether water or not, like I always say, put your finger in the soil. If it's damp, it's good. Don't water it. If you put your finger in the soil and it's bone dry, water it. And if you got them in a shady place like my bonsai in the afternoon, even in the summer, they're in the shade by about 3:30, 4 o'clock. And maybe even earlier, because I've got a couple of big, huge maple trees right there by the creek. Right. And, you know, so they don't get fried. They don't. And that's a good idea. Always try to put them in a place where they do best in morning sun, afternoon shade. And because if it's 103 and they're in a small pot and the sun is beaming right down on them, those roots are struggling to retain the moisture that it needs to live. But if it's that hot and in the sun that long, it dries it out very quickly in a small pot. So use some common sense there. In larger pots, for larger trees, it's not as critical, but I would still stick with the morning sun and then afternoon shade kind of locations for anything that's potted other than geraniums or petunias or, you know, those hot things that you grow in the spring. But all of mine are doing well, and everything I say to you on the radio, I've already made those mistakes. I've already learned how to correct them, and once you learn how to correct them, you don't make as many as often. And occasionally I make a mistake, but very occasionally.
Nah.
Once or twice a year, I think.
There you go.
But your perfect drainage, your good drainage is essential. Mix lots of bark mulch, fine grind bark mulch, sand, organic material, maybe a little topsoil in there. Just mix it all together very, very well and plant whatever you're going to plant bonsai-wise in a pot. That's what they like the best. That's what they're going to do the best in. And that kind of soil is not going to heat up and just continue to cook the plant, if you will. Whereas if you don't do that and you just use regular soil that you dig a hole in your yard and stick it in and most of it's clay, that's when you start to have problems because the clay gets warm, and the roots have a hard time getting established, and it doesn't drain well in the winter. So, but at any rate, how much time we got here?
About 4 minutes.
4 minutes.
Three and a half.
Because I've got a lot more notes on bonsai here, and I'm going to I said back to bonsai here. and I said earlier, like, I have several Japanese maples in pots, and they're being grown as bonsai or old-looking dwarf trees. Some have been, I've been working on for almost 20 years, and they're still in the same pot. The tree might only be 16, 18 inches tall and about that wide.
Wow.
And they've got these little gnarled, twisty limbs that I've created by pruning. And you can do that. You just have to have an eye for it and maybe get a book on bonsai with and there's many books on bonsai, and they've got great photos all the way through, like this one I brought
here.
It's
a nifty little book there.
Yeah, it is. And see, that's a type of Japanese maple, but you can see, too bad the radio audience can't see, but see how that trunk is? When they pruned it, they keep the top pretty short, and what that does, it promotes side growth, and so that's how you get the gnarled branches out to the side.
Yeah.
And anyway, this is a book full of photos and lots of information how to do grove type plantings or singular type plantings. And who put this out? I don't know.
Hillary Clinton?
No. I don't think so. You have to be creative. The author is Peter D. Adams, and it's called Bonsai Design of Japanese Maples, and has a lot of information. These are the kind you find at, you might find this at the co-op, or you might find it at one of the box stores in the magazine section, in the book section, because they have other gardening type books, how to plant a lawn, or how to do this, or how to do that, how to prune your trees. And there's some good information in them. And what I like about them, some that I've seen, how to design your yard. Well, I'll have a blank yard, a photo of a blank yard, then a photo of a yard that's being prepared, and the next photo is one with some plants in it, and then the next photo is when everything's done. And you can see the progression. And then it gives a verbal explanation of each step of the way in the preparation and the cleanup and, you know, soil prep, the type of plants, spacing, you know, all that stuff. So if you get a book you like that, and you've never done a landscape job, and you've got a brand new home, and you want to do it yourself, and you don't have to, and it doesn't have to be done all at once. It can be done over, you know, 5 or 7 year period, for crying out loud. But you get a lot of satisfaction out of that, and you make your yard very beautiful.
Nice.
So, are we done?
Almost. What's up for next week?
More of the same, and I'm trying to get the new owner in here to talk
get
on
her
the
in
air. I'm going to have to kidnap her, I guess, and bring her in. But
handcuff her.
Yeah, she's a very nice lady. And,
a little shy of the mic, I understand.
Yeah, she is, a little shy of the mic. And she said, oh, I listened to your show. It was great. You have a good radio voice. That's a little goody. Come on in and help.
Yeah, come on in and help us out.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see you next week, Mike.
Okay, thank you for listening.